It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 106, we discuss what we thought of ESPN Plus's debut of the FA Cup third round coverage, our thoughts on DC United signing with a streaming provider, Ligue 1 plans to invade America, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Now, Kartik, let's dive right in, and let's talk about what we've been watching from this past week, and what, for you, has been your highlights? What was the kind of the one game that stood out from the rest?
I think it was, and I know there's just a lot of controversy about this, and I'm sure our mailbag will be full next week, if it isn't already full this week on this subject. The FA Cup being able to whip around match to match, go from maybe the predictable result between a Premier League club and a League One or League Two club to that great giant killing, to be able to turn on the Newport County match, although that was a standalone match, right? That was on a Sunday. But on Saturday, to be able to jump around to what is the best match at the prompt of my finger on my iPad on ESPN Plus was something completely different and revived kind of an interest in the FA Cup third round, a competition which I have a great deal of sentiment for. I don't want to a lot of people accuse me of being disinterested in the FA Cup, and it's because I've just gone along the lines of the way a lot of the Premier League managers are, a lot of the Championship managers are, and the competition in general losing a lot of its luster in the last decade because of squalification, and quite frankly because of accessibility of those actual cup upsets that you then don't get to see the clips from for 3 days. But this ESPN Plus effort, Chris, allowed us the opportunity to consistently see matches at our fingertips, or if you have it on some sort of other device at the tip of your remote, and really revived the thrill of the FA Cup third round for me. Probably the best FA Cup third round for me since Leeds upset Manchester United at Old Trafford. Remember that? That was 2010, so 9 years ago.
I enjoyed it, but it was missing something. And the part that was missing was that shared experience. So in some ways, I mean, I love having access to all 32 games, but the games I watched, Kartik, were probably different than the games you watched. I watched Shrewsbury against Stoke. I watched Aston Villa against Swansea. I think I watched a little bit of Blackpool against Arsenal, which probably some people, some of the listeners also watched too. And I watched Newport against Leicester, which was my game of the week. But that was a game on, like you said too, it was at, I think, the only game at that specific time. But what we did miss was that shared experience. What we did miss was kind of that pre-match build-up, that halftime discussion, that post-match, oh my gosh, did you just see what happened there with Accrington Stanley? I mean, or whichever club it was Oldham, or a lot of these cup upsets. So that was the part that was missing, everyone kind of being able to share the same experience, share the same match and talk about it and have... You mean, for lack of a better expression, that water cooler moment where, like Monday morning, they say, "Hey, did you see that game? Wasn't it incredible?" Where Oldham was able to beat Fulham, or whichever game it was. Now that's the challenge that ESPN Plus has, is that there is no pre-match, halftime, or post-match coverage. But Max Bretos at ESPN did tweet out something. And he said, step one is to get the games up, which ESPN Plus has done exceptionally well. Shoulder programming shows would be next. I am working with some folks to help out there. So that's good news and a great hint, and actually kind of a breaking news there from Max Bretos, is that they are working on having some programs to kind of shoulder programming to kind of talk about the FA Cup. But all in all, I loved it. I mean, for $5 a month, Kartik, this is great. Having a choice of... all 32 games to watch live or on demand. The experience was good. I did notice for some of the games, they seemed to be in SD. They didn't seem to be in HD. But for me, that was fine. And I enjoyed it. It was a really kind of re-energized maybe FA Cup third rounds. And I think part of that too is just the cup upsets. You can see in the kind of the Davids beating the Goliaths, that kind of restores a lot of the faith. But the ESPN Plus angle was definitely a huge plus.
Yeah, on the bumper program issue, I agree with Max Brados. I would also say, though, ESPN FC has this stuff covered front to back. And the thing that's become so interesting about ESPN FC is as ESPN Plus acquires the rights to competitions, whether it be the League Cup or the FA Cup or Serie A and then other leagues, now that show has become highlights filled again, right? And they're not having the same problems they used to have with BeIN in terms of La Liga clips. So they have lots of La Liga highlights, and Fox has always provided them with Bundesliga highlights. So there's now suddenly that show is providing highlights and clips from everywhere when a year ago, because BeIN wouldn't give them highlights to anything. They didn't have Serie A, they didn't have Liga, they didn't have the FA Cup, they did not have La Liga, etc. So the FA Cup, the League Cup when that was on BeIN. Mm-hmm. So quite a change in fortunes for that show in terms of showing highlights, and the analysis still remains very good.
Yeah, the best thing that could have happened to ESPN FC is ESPN Plus. I mean, now, I mean, in the previous, I mean, going back a year ago, Kartik, when we were talking about what we've been watching, oftentimes you would talk about ESPN FC and say, okay, I heard some great analysis from Stuart Robson or from Dan Thomas or whoever it may be. And I think a lot of us weren't sharing that same experience because a lot of us, you know, either didn't have ESPN Plus because it didn't have all the great programming it has now, or we just weren't paying attention to it. I think there's a lot more people paying attention to it, and it has become the go-to source for soccer news, for soccer analysis. So yeah, it's great work by ESPN, and they're continuing to really carve out a market, which I think in many ways too, Kartik, you mentioned this on last week's podcast too. The championship, there's a lot more people watching the championship or even talking about the championship and more aware of what's happening in the championship, talking about through social media, than they've ever done in the past. So for the EFL and the championship, it's actually a good partnership. It's a great partnership to have these games streaming. Yes, they're not on television, but we have access now to more championship games than we've ever had before. So no complaints there from me. Kartik, the Man City-Liverpool game, obviously a huge match, a great result for your City side there too. But on that Thursday, which was an unusual day of the week to watch this game, to have it played. But I must say that was one of NBC Sports' best ever days with football analysis. Their pre-match analysis was fantastic. They went through... Which is a rarity because they don't have the ability to do this usually because there's usually a few games on. But to go through each of the 22 players on the pitch and give some really really good analysis about each player, kind of the strengths and weaknesses, that was incredible. Also having the pitch side desk there at the Etihad Stadium. But all in all, I think this really kind of showed the level that NBC is at, and it really leaves all the other US broadcasters in the dust with their analysis and coverage. I thought NBC just did fantastic on this one.
Yeah, Chris, actually the issue I don't think was that it was the only game. It was that they took less commercial breaks in that pregame show than they normally do.
Yeah.
And they were able to go through all 22 players. They were able to toss it back. Arlo White, Phil Neville, and Lee Dixon were at the pitch side desk. They were able to toss it back to Rebecca Lowe and team in the studio in Connecticut and do that seamlessly without Arlo White going through the back line for Liverpool and saying, okay, now let's go to a... And I don't know if they had a specific... sale of sponsorship for that specific pregame show, but there were less commercials. I'm convinced of it. Far fewer commercials than they normally air in their pregame or post-match shows.
And the viewership for this one was over 500,000 people, which is for a Thursday during office hours, a 3 p.m. kickoff, I believe it was. 542,000 people tuned in to watch this on NBCSN, which is incredible for a midweek game, especially one that's on an unusual day, on a Thursday when most people are not paying attention to soccer unless it's Europa League if your team's in it. But yeah, all in all, just fantastic coverage there. Anything else, Kartik, from this past week that you wanted to mention that stood out?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched both Real Madrid matches. They played Villarreal that same day as the Liverpool Man City match, and Santi Cazorla, great to see him fit, getting to play. I know he's been unhappy that even as he's gotten back to fitness, Villarreal has been sparing in the minutes they've given him just because they're scared of him breaking down again. That was good. And then obviously watched Real Madrid against Sociedad on BN on Sunday, I think it was, after the FA Cup matches. Or was it Saturday? I can't remember now. And that was a shock at the Bernabeu. And then also watched a little bit Liga MX. The match that stood out for me was Monterrey and Pachuca. Monterrey looked really good in the first match of the 2019 Apertura. Clausura. Looking forward to watching a little bit more Liga MX. I'm traveling the next few weeks, but then when I get back to the States, I'm looking forward to really kind of digging into that league this year.
Yeah, and then the midweek, which would have been Wednesday, I watched Real Madrid against Leganes in the Copa del Rey, and with Andres Cordero and George Metellus commentating that one for beIN Sports. And not the most convincing performance by Real Madrid in the first half, but eventually they went on to win this one pretty comfortably in that first leg of the quarterfinal. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so a lot of talk about this. I've actually written an article about it for another publication, the Flow Sports deal with DC United. DC United is taking their matches off of local cable for 20-some-odd years now. They've been on local cable in the Washington, D.C. area, most recently NBC Sports Washington. They are going to sign a deal with a company called Flow Sports, which I have to admit, Chris, I'd never heard of before this. Apparently, people who watch other sports, non-traditional sports, know a lot about them. It's part of a launch of a FlowFC.com streaming service, which will include rights to the DC United games, about 20 games that are not on national television, as well as Coppa Italia games for fans in Canada. Coverage will include live and on-demand coverage of the United games and some bumper programming, which was a justification I was given when asked about it, when I wrote this article earlier in the week, was that DC United was going to get a certain number of magazine programs and feature programs, even during the off season, that they're not getting currently on NBC Sports Washington. Okay, I think that's little reason to do this, but right. Whatever.
Yeah, my take on it on this is this: it's a short-sighted move by DC United to go with a really niche sports streaming provider with no track record in broadcasting soccer, and it's hard to see really any upside here for DC United fans, other than maybe potentially more revenue for their franchise. We don't know what the financial figures are. This is, as you said, Kartik, Flow Sports is this is the first time streaming soccer. In the past, I think they've focused a lot on lacrosse and a lot of really niche sports. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. If you're a DC United fan in the DC United area, this has got to hurt. You mean this is another service that you have to subscribe for if you want to watch those games. I understand the season ticket holders will get a discount, but you mean an average person off the street, I think it's about $15 a month. And for so little soccer coverage, really, except for DC United in the US, doesn't sound like it's really worth it. Even with a discount, you mean, I'm not sure whether it's worth it or not. And it's strange, this one, because I would think that, yes, if they are going to go with a streaming service, why not YouTube TV? Why not ESPN Plus? Why not somebody with more marketing power? And perhaps YouTube TV and ESPN Plus, maybe they weren't interested, or maybe it was that Flow Sports was offering more money. And if it does come down to money, that's not always the best decision. Yeah, it helps your financials at the end of the year, but it really doesn't help in terms of helping the fans be able to watch your games.
Unfortunately, this just reinforces a lot of stereotypes within U.S. soccer circles and MLS circles about DC United. They had been seen as kind of the black sheep of the family until Wayne Rooney was signed, and then they moved into Audi Park and thought, okay, they have a level of ambition. They brought Rooney in. They're finally opening their stadium, but this is a move back to kind of what has been the last decade of DC United, and there are a lot of people scratching their heads around the U.S. soccer world. In fact, MLS clubs have in general been trying to get more and more aggressive about getting on regional sports networks so that they're more accessible, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, your local Fox Sports Net or your NBC Sports Net. And so this is actually quite a departure from what's going on league-wide.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kartik, but because you're not going to stumble across a Flow Sports stream of a DC United game. You might stumble across a regional sports network's coverage or a regional local TV network of a DC United game and maybe fall in, maybe not fall in love, but become curious about it and watch it and then tune in next week and then eventually might become a fan. Yeah, it's not going to help their long-term goals by any means. Next up in the news, we've got Ligue 1. Ligue 1 is talking about invading America, and they've got Lyon, Monaco, Marseille, and Stade Rennais are reportedly interested in competing in a soccer tournament, a preseason tournament this summer in the U.S. to promote Ligue 1. The French league are in talks with relevant sports to organize this competition, which will feature two semifinals and one final. The U.S., India, and China have been named as priority markets for Ligue 1. Kartik, what's your take on this one? Do you think it could be a success?
It could be a moderate success, but I think they're late to the boat in the U.S. and outside of PSG don't have any real kind of star power. Although there's so many good players in the French league that end up going to other teams. I mean, you just think about the Liverpool-Manchester City match, and you think about Fabinho coming from Monaco. You think about Bernardo Silva, who probably was a man of the match. He came from Monaco, right? And all these other players that come from other French league clubs. But then they've said the U.S., India, and China, those are the same markets as everybody. In the U.S. and China, they're significantly behind the Premier League. Same thing in India. India, interestingly enough, and I'll be there next week, can report on this. My understanding is the Bundesliga, believe it or not, has made significant headway in terms of winning fans in India, which comes as a surprise to me because my previous trips there, the Bundesliga has been virtually invisible. But I'm hearing that now, their efforts there have actually borne more fruits than maybe here in the U.S. and in China and other places. So maybe Liga has a shot here based on that Bundesliga experience in India. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a step too soon for Liga. I mean, Lyon, Monaco, Marseille, and Stade Rennais, Lyon, Monaco, and Marseille have some. I mean, there are some fans in the U.S. based on those teams. There's definitely interest in those teams. They play a lot of good football. Whether or not people will actually go to watch these games and pay tickets to actually watch these games, I'm doubtful of this one. I mean, maybe at Red Bull Arena, maybe they can put on a 2-day event there. I just don't see this as being successful. I mean, they definitely need to market in the United States, but I think in many ways it's a step too soon. Maybe it's just having more of maybe it's one or two Ligue 1 teams other than PSG involved in the International Champions Cup and trying to build the fan base that way first before going out on your own and actually having your own competition. I don't know. I just don't see this as being a huge success. Last but not least, Kartik, some other news?
Yeah, so MLS has announced their TV schedule for 2019. I think the most obvious takeaway from it is that there's some flex scheduling the last 3 weeks. And in general, they're more midweek games because they're shortening the season. My understanding, Chris, is, and I'll throw this out here now, that they will probably extend the season again next season in 2020 and just start the season in February rather than extending it on the back end. They've determined that they want to get out of December for whatever reason, that's hurt MLS Cup ratings and it's hurt the MLS Cup playoff interest going through that November international break and taking 2 weeks between matches, which I get. So this is maybe a one-off year where they're going to have all these midweek matches. Big takeaway is the flex scheduling for the last 3 weeks. So they'll be able to determine Fox and ESPN the best matchups with the most playoff implications or supporters shield implications, whatever it may be, and put those on.
Yeah, and also too, they've got the midweek games, more midweek games than before. The other thing too is that so the schedule for 2019 is pretty much the same as 2018 in terms of how many games are going to be on each network. 28 on ESPN, 3 on ESPN2, 30 on FS1, 4 on Fox, which sounds like it's less than what it was last year, 14 on Univision, and then 13 on Unimas. So all in all, they're going to have a lot more primetime games on television, which should generate more viewers. The challenge for Major League Soccer, I think, in 2019 is going to be a few things. There's no World Cup bump in terms of trying to shoulder games against the World Cup games. Yes, there will be the Women's World Cup games. So if it's US scheduled on that same day, that's a great lead-in for Major League Soccer. If it's not the U.S. women's national team, then that's not going to be as effective. And, it seems to be fewer games on Big Fox, too, so we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's going to be a tough year for Major League Soccer in terms of trying to generate more viewers for their games across the entire season. All right, Kartik, TV ratings, not a lot. We mentioned the 542 for the Man City against Liverpool, which is, I think, a really good number. The other number we have is 405,000 people watched the Fulham-Arsenal game on January the 1st, on New Year's Day, on NBCSN. Now, Kartik, before we move on to the listener mailbag, do you want to ask you to look ahead to this coming weekend and to make a pick for which game is the must-watch game for you, and then I'll go ahead and share what mine is.
Okay, I guess it's a co-one. Napoli-Lazio, that's going to be on ESPN Plus for U.S. audiences, 2:30 on Sunday, 2:30 Eastern, excuse me. And then Spurs-United, which wouldn't be that interesting being at Wembley if not for the Solskjaer Pochettino factor. I mean, it would be interesting because they're two good teams, but Spurs wiped them out at Old Trafford earlier in the season. I'd expect them in their normal circumstances to do the same, but there's an injury to Lucas Moura, and obviously there's the new Solskjaer United. So those are my two matches. Sorry, I should have picked between the two of them, but back-to-back on Sunday, those two. So you'll have a good Sunday.
Kartik, you stole mine, which you didn't know what mine was going to be. You picked two. I picked one, which was Spurs against Man United on Sunday on NBCSN and Telemundo 11:30. This one for me is going to be the first real test for Solskjaer. So far the matches they've had, the opposition hasn't been as difficult. This one is going to be a tough one at Wembley. So this one we'll get to see what Man United are really made of. And Spurs, coming off that victory midweek against Chelsea in the League Cup, are going to be feeling good about this one. So this one should be a very fascinating game to watch, I believe.
Yeah, let me give you a bonus one, Chris. This is going to stick in your craw. Cardiff and Huddersfield on NBC Sports Gold on Saturday. If Cardiff get 3 points in this match, which based on recent form, we think they probably would, there is a really good chance they're going to stay up. And I think it was interesting. I was listening to the Guardian pod earlier this week, and Barry Glendening made the point that he thinks Warnock is now acting out like traditional Neil Warnock, because at the beginning of the season, everyone had written off Cardiff, and it was just like, okay, it's a nice story. Warnock, last act at 70, gets them promoted. Now it looks like they could stay up because the bottom of the Premier League is so weak. Yep. And now he's beginning to act out because – it feels like they can stay up. I think they probably get 3 points in this match. And sorry, Chris, they're going to be in the Premier League next year at this rate.
So how does this work, Kartik? We're supposed to pick one, you pick three.
Yeah, sorry.
I pick one. Let me pick a replacement, and that's Leeds against Derby County on Friday in the Championship on ESPN Plus. And Leeds United in first place, Derby in sixth. But Derby doing well, getting that draw against Southampton in the FA Cup. Under Frank Lampard, they've been doing wonderfully well in the Championship, and Leeds United suffering some injuries there, but still, as we've mentioned in the podcast, I think last week, Leeds United to me is one of the most attractive, exciting teams to watch. And that's just because of the way, the style that they play, the pace, the energy. I mean, the youth. They're just a really great watch, and they let a lot of goals in too, so it ends up being a kind of a high scoring game. So that's my pick, Kartik, since you stole mine. Leeds against Derby County on Friday, I think at 2:30 Eastern.
Yep.
All right, listener mailbag. First up is Jason. Jason says, a follow-up question about Kartik's great point about the English Championship. Are you saying that it is more believable that Ipswich can defeat Leeds United on any given day, which Ipswich is bottom or near the bottom, on any given day right now more so than Huddersfield can beat Liverpool? Also, do you think the Football League tiers should reduce the teams from 24 to 20 teams across the board?
Well, on that last question, it would certainly make it easier for championship teams to not have to rotate their squads as much. It's such a grind because you have 46 matches. But I don't ultimately think that's a good idea. The Premier League reduced to 20 because of a FIFA mandate to reduce. They were 22, actually. They reduced from 22 to 20 after it was the 94-95 season or 95-96 season. But I don't think universally that's a good idea through the divisions. I mean, in fact, I think 24 is a good number. If anything, you have some teams in the fifth tier that are paying players a fair amount of money. I mean, there's been some controversy about that recently. It's not just relegated teams from the Football League. It's other teams that are paying professional players, right, to drop down to the fifth tier and play for them, which has created some angst in amateur ranks. So if anything, there could be more teams.
What I would say, Kartik, is to me, the grind of the championship is one of the reasons why it makes it so exciting. Yeah. So having 24 teams in that league rather than say, 20 teams in other leagues, it does mean that some weeks you have three games a week. You have, a Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, or whatever it may be. But that actually makes it more entertaining because your squads are stretched thin. There's a little bit more rotation. Players get injured, and it does become more topsy-turvy rather than kind of having one game a week and you have time for players to rest and recover and some rotation, but not a lot. I like it that way. But what about his point, Kartik, about do you think it's more believable that Ipswich could beat Leeds more so than Huddersfield can beat Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, Leeds has lost three games on the bounce, and they're still top of that league. Well, two of the one match was an FA Cup match, but two matches on the bounce in the Championship. It's a much more competitive league than the Premier League. Now, that wasn't the case 5 years ago in the Premier League. I mean, I keep having to bring this up, but there's this growing separation. And Chris, it's not just us talking about it. I've listened to other football podcasts. I mentioned The Guardian a few minutes ago. They've talked about it, that there's just this gap between sixth and seventh that's opened up in terms of just it being multiple divisions, multiple leagues. Yeah, I think it's unlikely. You do see upsets from time to time, but not at the rate you do in the championship. I mean, the thing about the championship, Chris, that is so interesting is that there's every season there is some team that is hovering near the relegation zone as you enter the Christmas period that by March or April is pushing for a playoff spot, and they usually do that by beating the teams that are fighting for automatic promotion.
Yeah, so, and this year. This season it's QPR. Last season it was Fulham, right? Fulham was near the bottom.
Fulham, yeah. It was Reading a few years ago, if you remember, that was sitting in the bottom three and ended up in the playoff. And actually Hull, keep an eye on Hull. They've now begun that ascent up the table where they were fighting relegation until mid-December, had a really good holiday period, festive period. They're up to 13th or 14th now. They might be that team. So that doesn't happen in the Premier League.
Next up is Greg. You'll never walk alone. He says, good discussion about the championship. You both hit the nail on the head with ESPN Plus. $50 per year is a bargain for their high-quality streaming and significant amount of soccer programming and other sports programming too. Yannick Ramke says, since you asked, I have my hot takes ready to go. Two comments. Number one, I don't think ESPN Plus BAMTech is unquestionably the best tech stack. Just didn't have that marquee high traffic event with which everyone struggled. Number two, Turner Sports saying that there wasn't enough time to customize iStream Planet, acquired in 2015 for Bleacher Report, is weird. Decided early on to buy instead of make over-the-top capabilities, NBC's Playmaker, at least much cheaper than BAMTech, which was cost about $3.4 billion. Now, to answer Yannick's first point, BAMTech has been tested. BAMTech, the technology that they're using, the streaming service that you're using, which is what ESPN Plus is built on, was HBO, the HBO Go app, I think it was, or HBO Now. I always get confused between the two. But, I mean, the most streamed television series ever, as far as live television, was Game of Thrones. And in the early days, there was issues with the streaming of that. It would crash. In came BAMTech to rescue it, and now it's, I mean, flawless and no problems there. Same with ESPN Plus. It's very, very rare that you get any issues with streaming on ESPN Plus, which is on the BAMTech, which is now owned by Disney. The Tuna Sports thing, yeah, it's a good point too about Tuna Sports, which is strange, kind of that there wasn't enough time to build something, but it is what it is. All right, Chad Loveday says, maybe I missed your observations on it, but I'm curious about your thoughts on ESPN's decision to show the FA Cup exclusively on ESPN Plus and not on the main network. At least Fox prioritized the Cup somewhat. What's your opinion about this one, Kartik?
I'm of two minds about it. I see his point of view and agree with that to maybe half of me. And then the other half of me says, well, they're trying to build inventory for ESPN Plus, which is important, and I think is giving us great value as ESPN Plus subscribers. And again, BAMTech didn't let me down. I didn't have a single problem with FA Cup streaming this weekend. I'm constantly having problems with NBC Sports Gold, or I shouldn't say constantly, but I'm often having problems with NBC Sports Gold or Bleacher Report Live. So I kind of liked it, but at the same time, yeah, it's a question of priorities. I think they are prioritizing the building of inventory on ESPN Plus, whereas Fox at the time was prioritizing filling up FS1 and FS2 with programming after they launched those two networks. I don't think it was necessarily that they thought the FA Cup was some sort of massive event. Mm-hmm. Now, when we get to the final, that might be where we feel, and I think we might have even felt it this week with the Spurs-Chelsea first leg in the League Cup semifinals. That match a year ago would have been moved to ESPN or ESPN2.
Yeah, the FA Cup, as of right now, ESPN is going to have all of the games, including the final, on ESPN+. And while I understand kind of Chad's point in terms of wouldn't it be great to have some of those games on the main network, to me it dilutes the value of ESPN Plus if you put some of those games on television. It's like, why bother signing up for ESPN Plus if you can just like skip a couple of rounds and watch the games through ESPN or ESPN2? So it's more of a business decision. With the League Cup, it'll be interesting because, I mean, now with it being on ESPN Plus, last year it was on ESPN 3, I believe it was, but then some of the later round games, I think the final, was on television. Whether they switch that, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep the all of the League Cup games, including the final and the second legs of these semifinals, on ESPN Plus exclusively, just to try to basically elevate that and add more value to that ESPN Plus as a separate product. And at the end of the day, it's just $5 a month, so it should be a slam dunk. There's still a lot of people complaining on social media about, I can't believe it. I think Grant Wall was somebody this week that said, I can't believe that these broadcasters are putting programming behind paywalls. It's $5 a month, and with all the access of all the content that you get, whether it's live games, on-demand games, ESPN FC, plus all of the 30 for 30 programming, the documentaries, I mean, for me, ESPN's losing money on this streaming service. And for me as a consumer, $5 a month, I'm happy with that. Raymond Orozco says, and I'm going to summarize a little bit too because it's a pretty long one, but he says, I am trying to understand soccer fandom here in this country. I personally watch European... it is a good point though, Kartik.
It's a great question. I mean, I think I know where he's going, and I have the same things. Go ahead.
Okay. Raymond continues. He says, I personally watch European soccer because I believe it is the best quality, and I generally watch the bigger teams and care very little about relegation. MLS fans tell me they like the competitive balance of MLS and dislike the European system because they say it lacks competitive balance. But what is competitive balance? I've seen first with the Premier League, Real Madrid and Barcelona lose the last place team in Spain, and the same thing in England, where Man City just recently lost to Crystal Palace. And when teams miss out on winning the league title or finished in fourth place. Most soccer analysts say it wasn't a performance against the top of the half table. It was the points dropped by the bottom half of the table, I guess, in the matches against the teams near the bottom. Many of MLS's fans trying to use that the Kevin Keegan argument that it's boring, it's the same teams that win it, but Man United haven't won the title in half a decade now, and Arsenal hasn't done it in over a decade, and I believe it's because of the big teams you have seen so much more investment into English football, which has made it more competitive, hasn't it? Kartik, I'm sure you have some viewpoints on this one.
Yeah, first off, it's been masked by Champions League the last few years, but American soccer fans who don't pay attention and, you know, resort to these lazy arguments, Real Madrid has been losing constantly to teams near the bottom of the table the last two or three seasons. I mean, it's almost become very predictable that they'll lose some sort of crazy match at the Bernabeu once every two or three months to a team that's fighting relegation. I mean, that's how often it's happening. And Raymond mentions it happens in the Premier League. Palace beat Manchester City at the Etihad. We see Barcelona drop matches like this. We've seen Bayern drop some strange matches this season in particular, at the beginning of last season also. So it happens. It's not happening as much with Juventus or PSG, although PSG didn't win the league two seasons ago, right? Monaco did. So there is more competitiveness than the American fan maybe give credit for. Now, on the MLS competitive front, I personally like more competitive leagues than less competitive leagues. We've talked about the championship. I do think there are competition issues within the Premier League. But Major League Soccer has an enforced parity, which has forced, which has essentially stripped potential super clubs of their ability to be that team that teams want to upset, other sides want to upset. So you say that there's a lot of, we're saying there's upsets all the time with Real Madrid losing matches to smaller teams, the teams fighting relegation. We don't know what an upset is in Major League Soccer, or is it, right? Because there's such enforced parity. Now, my hope is, and again, I know I'm going to offend a lot of people because they're most MLS fans outside of Atlanta or outside of the Southeast are jealous of Atlanta United. And it comes up all the time in conversation. And, critiques are they mask their jealousy with critiques. But I think the best thing for MLS will be if Atlanta continues to ascend. They become that super club. They become that Manchester United. They become that Bayern. They become that Juventus. And everybody's taking a shot at them. And then when they do lose, because of the enforced competitiveness of MLS, then it'll be a bigger event and it'll be better for the league. So, yeah, I agree with Raymond. These arguments just they bother me to death because I believe in competitiveness. I've said that with the championship. That's why I prefer the championship right now to the Premier League. But MLS, it's a whole different level of enforced parity and lazy stereotypical arguments about competition.
I always find the argument of parity, which, I mean, I think Alexi Lalas is probably the number one person that talks about parity, and that's one of the reasons he loves Major League Soccer so much. But I always find it strange because, I mean, during the course of a regular season, just a regular season, I mean, for 2019, more than 50% of the teams will actually qualify for the playoffs. So you could, kind of just be motoring along, losing a bunch of games, winning a couple here, losing a bunch more, winning a few more, and end up in the playoffs. It's only at the playoffs, really, where it then becomes, it's a knockout competition at that point, which that's when the Major League Soccer becomes interesting. That's when it becomes entertaining, is kind of usually from September through till December or November in the case of 2019. That's when it becomes exciting. That's when it becomes the parity's there then. Then it's that you have all teams. I mean, from whether it's lower in the conference or from a different conference or higher up in the conference, wherever it may be, then it's a crapshoot. Then it's Russian roulette, and then it becomes exciting. But for the season itself, where, again, over 50% of the teams qualifying for the playoffs, that parity is relatively meaningless because, a Colorado Rapids, which is an awful team, could possibly make the playoffs. And at that point, then things get exciting. But for the rest of the regular season, it's... there isn't many reasons to watch it, in my opinion. Anthony Bello says, "Hi, guys. I hope you had a happy festive period. Anyway, I've just listened to your podcast and would like to counter most of your arguments. A disclaimer, sure, before NBC Sports Gold, a lot of people got extra time, but I wasn't one of them. My cable company didn't pick up the extra time channels and didn't want to. So despite the fact I was paying for an NBC SN subscription, I wasn't getting the full value for it. Now to my hot takes. First, I believe when it comes to Serie A, ESPN does the same thing NBC does with the Premier League. If the game is on a ESPN network, you cannot get it on ESPN Plus. Also, what is the difference between the two services? Both are a la carte. Both are made for cord cutters. You don't need a cable subscription to get them. As for the pricing system, a lot of sports subscriptions are sold on a season basis instead of a month to month. That is what every North American league does with their out-of-market packages. ESPN Plus and DAZN can sell their service on a monthly basis because they have a lot of different sports on their platforms. Personally, I would rather pay a lump sum for the entire season and get it over with. Meanwhile, the ESPN Plus app has logged me out on multiple occasions. I don't think that has ever happened with NBC Sports Gold. Also with NBC, you know the biggest games are going to be on television, unlike with ESPN, who is probably going to put the entire FA Cup behind a paywall. Heck, they are showing rugby matches on ESPN2 on Saturday mornings instead of the FA Cup. Not only that, but more than likely, all you're going to get is the game. There's going to be no studio wrap around programming in ESPN Plus FA Cup coverage. From what I am seeing, ESPN is not doing the same thing NBC is doing, and they are worse. They are making me pay more for games at a higher price on a payment schedule I don't like, with less of the bells and whistles. How can you guys be okay with ESPN doing what they were doing and not be okay with NBC doing the same thing? So I've got a lot to get to there, Kartik. I still think that ESPN Plus and NBC Sports Gold, while there are similarities, there are differences. I mean, with ESPN Plus, you have access to probably about 9 or 10 different soccer leagues from around the world. It's not just the competitions like the FA Cup or the League Cup, but you've got Serie A, you've got the Chinese Super League, you've got the Eredivisie, you've got the Championship, so on and so forth. UEFA Nations League.
You get
League.
MLS Live, actually, you know, which used to be a much more expensive pay service. You get that also.
Yeah, yeah. The going to Anthony's point about kind of the season, paying for the entire season rather than a month to month, I understand where he's coming from. My concern with that is signing up for a season package is sometimes you don't know the quality of the service. So, for example, a lot of people signed up for BR Live back in August and said, okay, I'm going to go with the season package. It's cheaper, and that way I've got it for the entire season. Nobody knew, as far as BR Live, what the quality of that service was going to be. And they've had problems. They've had crashes. And I think there's been some people that have had regrets of signing up for the entire season and getting stuck with a streaming service that's really not good enough. They've corrected those issues, and I think by this stage now that they're fine. There's always mistakes that are going to happen. But that's my concern with the season package. And that's why I like the month-to-month, because I can say, hey, you mean for the month of, if I'm going away on vacation for a few weeks, if I want to, I can go ahead and cancel that subscription and then renew it after I get back. Kartik, any other points you want to address? A lot of hot takes there from Anthony.
Yeah, I think Anthony's perspective is a little different than mine, partly because he didn't have Live Extra with his cable company. I think that makes all the difference, because now he has access to those games via Gold, which he didn't have access to before. From my perspective, those are matches I had for free. They're not really free because you pay for NBCSN, whatever, you pay for your cable system. But in my mind, at least, I had them for free, and now I'm paying for them. So I think that's a big part of it. As far as being logged in and logged out on ESPN Plus versus NBC Sports Gold, it's kind of funny. It's the exact opposite thing for me. Now, in fact, it was so bad with NBC Sports Gold, I couldn't remember my password. Turned out I had a really simple password, but I couldn't remember my password earlier in the season, and I couldn't get in, and they were, you know, it sent me a code, and I ended up just not using it for like a month or two. And with ESPN, they made it, you know, it's almost too remarkably easy. I opened my ESPN app, and right there, like, for example, yesterday, I opened my ESPN app. You would think the first thing you would see is some NBA or NFL or something. First thing I see is, because they know my preferences, Burton versus Manchester City. Here is the live broadcast. on the news portion of the app. Not even I didn't even have to go to watch the watch tab or to the ESPN Plus tab. It's built in. So I just maybe it's personal preference. I just like it better. I like the way it's integrated. Now this. Having been said, Chris, and you've reported this already, NBC Sports Gold will be folded into the NBC Sports app at some point this year, 2019. And my guess is when that happens, it'll be similar in the way they deliver the content to ESPN. But as of now, it's not like that. It's a completely different thing and logs me out at times, and it seems kind of clunky.
I will mention one thing that Anthony did say, which is that both ESPN Plus and NBC Sports Gold, in his views, are cord-cutting solutions. And to me, as a cord-cutter, they're not, because both of them are very similar in that respect, where if you want to have access to every single Serie A game, you have to have ESPN or ESPN2 through your cable or through a streaming service on top of ESPN Plus. And the same thing for NBC Sports Gold. If you want to have access to all the Premier League matches, you need NBC Sports Gold plus access to NBCSN, CNBC, and over-the-air NBC channel in order to have access to everything. So that is one example where they are similar. John Average Geek finally says, while I would like less soccer behind paywalls, I understand why it is. Do rugby, UFC, boxing fans complain about paywalls as much as soccer fans? Why do we feel so entitled? Even NBA, NHL, MLB, NFL have the majority of games behind paywalls. And I agree with John here. I think it's one of those things that Grant Wall this week complaining about having all these games behind paywalls. Obviously, none of us would like to. Well, all of us would love to have soccer on. I mean, over the air, free to air television on our NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox channels. That's not going to happen. And as the rights fees go up and up and up, I mean, the Premier League's a perfect example of that. $1 billion for the rights fees to show the Premier League on NBC. NBC had to pay that money for, I think, 6 years. You mean somebody has to pay for that? Yes, there's advertising. But with the advertising, they're continually looking for ways to monetize and to be able to pay for these rights. And I agree with John here, too, is that why do we as soccer fans feel so entitled? It just seems like we're a bunch of complainers at times.
Yeah, I think it's weird because at one point in time, we were used to just going to great lengths to find matches. I guess it does seem like we're entitled at times, doesn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of the comparisons go back to Fox Soccer Channel. A lot of people say, like, wow, wouldn't it be great to go back to what Fox Soccer Channel it was? And we have to remember that, yes, Fox Soccer Channel was great back in the heyday, but it didn't have a ton of coverage. I mean, it had far fewer Premier League games. Usually it would have maybe 3 a weekend, sometimes 4 a weekend.
And there'd be like one on Fox Soccer Plus, right? That maybe.
Well, even before that, I mean, when it was just the, I guess it depends which stage of the Fox Soccer Channel. But before they had Fox Soccer Plus, before you had to have Setanta too, so you'd have to have Fox Soccer Channel plus Setanta,
right.
And then you wouldn't have access to a ton of the games that we have now. Now we have access to every single match that's been kicked off practically from any major league from around the world. And going back to the Fox Soccer Channel days, you had a few Premier League games. You had sometimes a game from La Liga, maybe, which was on Gold TV. I mean, it would be very, very few. You wouldn't be able to see the games. Now you have access to everything. If you want to have access to everything, you have to pay for it. And I think for the vast majority of soccer fans, we don't mind that as long as we're getting good service and good value. And a lot of these streaming services, we are getting good value and quality streams too. Not all of them are the same, but times have changed.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com to share your viewpoints, whether you agree or disagree with us, or have some hot takes, or want some advice on streaming or watching your favorite club or league on television. Plus, you can also reach us through facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on our website, worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, if they want to reach out to you and kind of find out about your travels or your opinions or your appearances on TalkSport or SiriusXM, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KKFLA737.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of football, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.